Okay, so you've sent us quite a stack of material this time, all focused on inflation. It's a big topic.
It really is.
So for you listening, we're going to try and break it all down, pull out the really key bits from these sources so you can get a handle on this whole inflation thing without, feeling totally overwhelmed.
Exactly. That's the mission, right? Cut through the noise. We'll look at the different flavors of inflation, how it's actually measured, some surprising bits there, and really how it connects to, well, your wallet and the bigger picture.
And we're also touching on deflation and disinflation and the tools used to manage it all.
Yep, got to cover those too. They're all related pieces of the economic puzzle.
All right, let's dive straight in then. Inflation, what is it basically?
Fundamentally, it's when the general level of prices for goods and services consistently goes up over a period of time.
So everything gets more expensive.
Pretty much, yeah. Think about your grocery shopping or filling up your car. If that total cost keeps creeping up for the same stuff, that's inflation in action. And the big consequence, your money doesn't buy as much. That's reduced purchasing power.
Gotcha. So it's not just one thing getting pricey, it's a broad trend.
Exactly. It has to be sustained, a general increase. And it's not all the same. Our sources talk about like four main categories depending on how fast prices are rising.
Four types. Okay, lay them on us. Start mild.
Okay, first up is creeping inflation. This is slow and steady, usually less than 3% a year. And interestingly, many economists actually see this low level as kind of healthy.
Healthy, really?
Yeah, like that 2% target you hear central banks talk about. It's seen as enough to gently encourage spending and investment, keep things moving without letting the economy, boil over.
Okay, so a little creep is maybe good. What's next? When does it start to, bite a bit more?
That'd be walking inflation. Now we're talking price rises between, say, 3% and 10% per year. And this is where you definitely start to feel it. People might start buying things sooner because they expect prices to go up even more. And anyone on a fixed income, they really feel the squeeze. Affordability becomes a real issue.
Yeah, I can see that. If your pay isn't keeping up, 5 or 10% price hikes year after year? Ouch. What's after walking?
Things get significantly more serious with galloping inflation. That's when inflation breaks past that 10% annual mark.
Okay, double digits.
Yeah. And this can cause real economic trouble. People's savings lose value fast. Wages often can't keep pace. The value of money just plummets. Foreign investment tends to dry up too because things just feel too unstable.
That sounds pretty bad. And then there's a really extreme one, right? Hyperinflation.
Hyperinflation, that's the worst case scenario. We're talking prices rising by more than 50% per month.
Per month, wow.
Yeah. It's thankfully rare, but it happens. Often linked to things like governments printing way too much money. The sources mention, historical examples like Germany back in the 1920s.
Weimar Republic, yeah.
Right. Or Zimbabwe in the 2000s, Venezuela more recently. In those situations, money essentially loses all meaning. I mean, think about Zimbabwe. Prices could literally double in a matter of hours. Trust in the currency just collapses.
Unbelievable. Okay, so those are the type. How on earth do economists actually measure this stuff across a whole economy? It seems complicated.
It is, but they have methods. The core idea is this thing called a market basket.
A market basket, like a shopping list.
Sort of, yeah. Imagine a typical shopping cart filled with goods and services that an average household buys regularly: food, rent or mortgage payments, transport, clothes, healthcare. You name it. And this basket isn't just fixed forever. They update it now and then to reflect, changing habits, what people are actually buying.
Right, so maybe less CD players, more streaming subscriptions now.
Exactly like that. So once they have this representative basket, they need to track its cost.
How do they do that?
It's a multi-step process. First, they pick a starting point, a base year, for comparison. Then they define exactly what's in the basket and how much of each item. Critically, each item gets a weight.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, based on how much of the average household budget it takes up. So housing costs would have a much bigger weight, a bigger impact on the overall measure than, say, the price of toothpaste.
Makes sense. Housing is a huge expense for most people.
Right. Then data collectors go out and track the actual prices of all these items in various shops, online, wherever people buy things. Finally, they calculate the price changes, apply the weights, and combine it all into a single number, a price index.
And the big ones we hear about are the CPI and PPI.
Those are the main ones, yeah. The CPI, Consumer Price Index, that tracks the prices from our perspective, the consumers. It measures the cost of that market basket we talked about, the groceries, the gas, the rent.
That's the one that directly affects us.
Pretty much. And then there's the PPI, the Producer Price Index. That looks at prices from the seller side, what domestic producers are getting for their goods.
So before it even gets to the shops?
Often, yes. The PPI can sometimes be like an early warning signal, right? If producers' costs are going up, that might eventually translate into higher prices for consumers down the line.
Okay, CPI is what we pay, PPI is what producers charge.
And these indices, they rely on representative samples, data from lots of places, that crucial weighting system, and that base year concept. Usually the base year index is set to 100.
Right.
So if the index goes up to, say, 110, it means prices have risen 10% overall since that base year. If it went below 100, that would actually be deflation prices falling.
That makes interpreting those numbers much clearer. Okay, let's shift slightly. You mentioned purchasing power. This ties into real value versus money value, right? What's the deal there?
Absolutely, vital distinction. Money value, or nominal value, is just the face value. The number on the price tag, the amount in your paycheck, $50,000, $100, whatever.
It's just the number.
Just the number. But real value is what that money can actually buy. It's the money value adjusted for inflation.
Ah.
So, like the example in the sources. If you earn $50,000 this year, that's the money value, but inflation was 5%. The real value of that salary, in terms of what goods and services it commands, is actually less than 50,000 BIROS compared to last year's prices. It's like having only around 47,600 in last year's money.
So inflation eats away at the real value, even if the number looks the same or even goes up slightly?
Precisely. That's why understanding real value is crucial for seeing how inflation truly affects our standard of living.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. So what actually causes this inflation in the first place? Where does it come from?
Broadly speaking, economists point to two main drivers, two types of inflation based on the cost. There's cost push inflation and demand pull inflation.
Cost push sounds like costs are pushing prices up.
You got it. That happens when the costs for businesses to produce stuff go up. Think higher wages, more expensive raw materials, energy prices soaring. Mm-hmm. And to protect their profits, businesses often pass those higher costs onto us, the consumers, by raising their prices. It can also mean they produce less if it gets too expensive, which also pushes prices up. So yeah, a push from the cost side.
Right. Costs get passed along. What about the other one? Demand pull.
Demand pull is kind of the opposite. It happens when there's just too much demand in the economy chasing after a limited supply of goods and services.
Like everyone suddenly wants to buy the same thing.
On a bigger scale, yeah. It's often described as too much money chasing too few goods. You see it in booming economies sometimes where people are spending more, businesses are investing, government spending might be high.
Mm-hmm.
All this demand pulls prices upward because supply can't keep up immediately.
Okay, so cost push. Rising costs, squeeze supply, push prices up, demand pull. Too much spending pulls prices up because there isn't enough stuff. Clear. Now, the consequences. We know high inflation is bad, but you mentioned maybe some upsides earlier.
Yeah, it's complex. Let's hit the negatives first, as they're often more severe. High inflation can hurt exports, making a country's goods too pricey for foreigners.
Right.
It also causes unplanned shifts in wealth.
Mm.
People who owe money, like debtors, might benefit because the real value of their debt shrinks.
Yeah.
But people on fixed incomes, pensioners, for example, definitely lose out as their money buys less and less.
And what about those terms, menu costs and shoe leather costs?
Oh, yes. Menu costs are literally the costs businesses face from having to constantly change their prices, printing new menus, updating price tags online or in stores, reprogramming vending machines. It all adds up.
Okay, the physical cost of changing prices.
Exactly. And shoe leather costs, that's more metaphorical. It represents the time and effort people waste trying to manage their money during high inflation. You know, making extra trips to the bank, constantly searching for better returns to protect their savings, basically wearing out their shoe leather running around.
Haha, I like that image. Okay, what else?
Well, there's fiscal drag. That's when inflation pushes your nominal income into a higher tax bracket, even if your real purchasing power hasn't actually increased. So you end up paying a higher percentage in tax.
Sneaky.
It can be. Inflation also creates uncertainty, which can discourage businesses from making long-term investments. Then there's inflationary noise, basically. Rapidly changing prices make it hard to tell what's a real price signal and what's just inflation, confusing economic decisions. And of course, imported inflation. If the stuff we buy from other countries gets more expensive, that feeds into our own inflation.
Wow, that's quite a list of downsides. But you hinted at potential positives for moderate inflation.
Yes, if inflation is low and stable, say that creeping level, it can have some potential benefits. It might encourage people to spend or borrow now rather than later, assuming prices will rise.
Okay, keeps the economy moving.
Potentially. It also eases the real burden of debt, which can be good for borrowers, including governments with large debts. And in the short run, at least, some businesses might see higher profits, which could lead to wage increases, though that's not guaranteed. Some argue it can grease the wheels of the labor market and maybe help keep unemployment lower, if managed well.
So it really is a balancing act. Not too hot, not too cold.
Exactly. And the actual impact, as the sources stress, really depends on a few things. How high is the inflation rate? Was it expected, or did it come as a surprise? Is it stable or volatile? How does it compare to other countries? And crucially, what's causing it? Is it cost push or demand pull? All those factors matter.
Okay, now let's quickly cover the opposites or near opposites. Deflation and disinflation, what's the difference again?
Right, deflation's the opposite of inflation. It's a general fall in prices. Sounds good, maybe, lower prices.
Yeah, sounds great.
But it can be really dangerous for an economy. If people expect prices to keep falling, they delay spending. Why buy today if it's cheaper tomorrow?
Okay. I see the problem.
Yeah, that leads to falling demand, businesses cut production, unemployment rises. It can also increase the real value of debt, making it harder to pay back loans. It can be a nasty downward spiral.
Okay, so deflation, falling prices, potentially very bad. What's disinflation then?
Disinflation is just a slowing down of the inflation rate. Prices are still going up, but not as fast as they were before. So if inflation was 8% last year and it's 4% this year, that's disinflation.
Got it. Still inflating, just less quickly. Deflation sounds particularly worrying, though. What causes that?
A few things can trigger it. A big drop in overall demand is a major one. Sometimes big improvements in technology or efficiency can lower production costs enough to cause falling prices across the board.
Oh, interesting.
Also, government austerity policies, big spending cuts or tax hikes could potentially tip an economy into deflation. And even just a significant increase in people saving money instead of spending it can dampen demand enough.
And the effects, as you said, are pretty grim. Debt burdens grow, people stop spending, investment drops, unemployment rises. Not good.
Definitely not something policymakers want to see take hold.
So that brings us to policies. What can governments and central banks actually do about either too much inflation or this dangerous deflation?
They have toolkits for both situations. To fight inflation, they mainly use fiscal policy and monetary policy.
Fiscal policy, that's government taxes and spending.
Exactly. The government can try to cool down the economy by reducing its own spending or by raising taxes to take money out of circulation and reduce overall demand.
Okay. And monetary policy. That's the central bank.
Right. Their main tool is usually interest rates. They can raise interest rates, making it more expensive to borrow money. That tends to dampen spending by both consumers and businesses. They can also try to reduce the overall money supply in the economy.
And there are longer-term approaches, too.
Yes, supply-side policies. These aim to increase the economy's ability to produce goods and services efficiently in the long run. Things like investing in education, infrastructure, encouraging innovation. If the economy can produce more, that can help ease inflationary pressures over time.
Okay, so tools to slow things down for inflation. What about fighting deflation? I assume they just reverse everything.
Pretty much, yes. For fiscal policy, the government would do the opposite. Increase spending, maybe on big projects, or cut taxes to leave people with more money to spend.
Stimulate demand.
Exactly. And for monetary policy, the central bank would lower interest rates, making borrowing cheaper to encourage spending and investment. They might also use tools like quantitative easing, which is basically creating new money to inject into the financial system, hoping it gets lent out and spent.
Right, trying to get things moving again. Wow, okay. This has been incredibly helpful. We've gone from defining inflation through all the types, how it's measured, the real versus nominal value.
The causes, the consequences, good and bad.
The dangers of deflation. And the policies governments and banks use to try and steer the ship. It's a lot, but you've made it really clear. Thanks.
My pleasure. It really is central to understanding the economic world around us. It affects everyone.
Absolutely. So hopefully for everyone listening, you now feel a bit more equipped when you hear those inflation figures announced or read about central bank decisions. You've got a framework now for thinking about the different types, the measurements, the causes, and the effects.
Definitely. And maybe just one final thought to leave you with, building on all this. Given everything we've discussed, the different drivers like demand pull or cost push, the global factors, what little clues or early signs might you start looking for now in the news or data?
That's a good question.
Things like reports on consumer confidence or people feeling optimistic and ready to spend, or maybe changes in the PPI, those producer prices we talked about, or trends in wage growth, or even reports on, say, shipping costs and supply chain issues. These could all be subtle indicators hinting at where inflation might be headed next. Something to think about.
That's a really practical way to apply this, looking for those early signals. Great point. Well, thanks again for this fantastic deep dive. We really appreciate you breaking it all down.
Happy to help.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in. We hope this exploration of inflation has been valuable. We'll be back soon with another deep dive, digging into more topics you've asked us about.